The following presentation was recorded at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
All right. The subject we have here to end the day on is evaluating the school. And again, I've tried to keep it simple and very practical. I have three questions I'd like for you to enter into this discussion. The questions are, first, why evaluate? Second, what should be evaluated? And third, on page 2, what methods of evaluation shall we use? And then a few guidelines to kind of wrap things up with. I'd like some help from you on question 1. Why should a school be evaluated anyway? Can't hardly be wrong. Just tell me what you think. Why should you be evaluating your school?
Prevent the ruts.
Prevent the ruts. Good. Somebody else? Well, you understand what he's saying. We get into ruts, you know, and they can even be wrong, but if the rut's there, we want to stay in it, right? Unless we have a good, solid, open evaluation. Are we really doing the right thing? I like that answer. Make sure you're going in the right direction. I mean, the question is almost simplistic, but yeah, are we going the right direction? I was going to ask, and maybe I will ask, how many of you are from schools where there is a regular evaluation of sorts done? You're going to meet this month. And the board meeting is getting together, and the particular purpose, remember some of you are in the meetings, are in my session here in the morning, and the purpose is to evaluate the school. Do you do that at all? Okay, it'd be good if you do. Why evaluate? The answers we have here are, we don't want to get in ruts, we want to go the right direction. I just have one word here, we want accountability. I mean, we expect it anywhere else. Who would run a business that was losing money? It was unsuccessful. It was going down the tube. They get to the end of the year and they pay their taxes. They do their evaluation. And they go right on into the next year. They just keep going year after year, losing money. They never stop to think what's going on. We don't run our businesses that way. We shouldn't run our schools that way either. Obviously, the biggest part of what I have here to say is on question 2, what should be evaluated? So I'm first of all encouraging you, don't neglect number 1. Set up something tangible in your school where you're going to actually do some evaluation. Going here to number 2 and giving you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 areas and then some subheadings here. 1, organizational structure, 2, academics, 3, relationships, 4, finances, in 5, physical plant. Maybe you'll be able to add some others to that. I'll just go back and comment a bit on each one of these. Organizational structure. The key question is actually be there. Well, you want to ask yourself this question. Who is being neglected in terms of accountability and input in the school? Second grade teacher? Is there anybody who is providing input for that teacher? Is there anybody who is providing an accountability for that teacher? How about the principal or whatever? Okay. Roles. There says roles develop a flow chart. For me, this has been very, very helpful. I am not a naturally organized person. It takes a little work on my part to do that. But if I can see it, if I can visualize it, what the expectations are, then I can get something accomplished. Here, for example, I should have one to put here. I thought I had one with me, an overhead that has a complete flowchart on it, but can't find it in my stuff. Flowcharts look like this. Okay. My point here is this person, I hear it at Faith Builders, the director is in this slot. Okay. I know who I'm accountable to. I can just look at that chart and I know who I am to answer to. Okay? The people under me, they know exactly who they're supposed to answer to. If I draw another box down here, David is a business manager here. I put his name in here. Run it out there. What does that mean? We are in an accountable relationship. He expects some input from me. I expect some input from him. Okay? He's accountable to me in some ways. I'm accountable to him. All right? That flow chart shows it. And I have found this. I have found sometimes if you sit down with an organization who thought they knew who's doing what and ask them to draw and show them, show me how this actually works, they can't. Okay? You ought to be able to do that. And you ought to be able to take into account the people in the school. All right? So, for example, down here somewhere is the second grade students, you know. And the question is, who is holding them accountable? Who is doing the input? How is this working? Okay? That's why I'm saying you need to evaluate organizational structure and simply ask yourself the question, who is being neglected? That's the question. And it's it. The bigger the organization, the more this slips through the cracks. Okay? And people don't, they're not receiving input. I'll be real fair with you. Last year, here in the teacher training program, we were really short on help, and even this year somewhat. I feel very badly about this. We're in mentoring relationships. Here sits Mr. Glenn, here in the green shirt. And he's, just to give you an idea, so you understand what I'm talking about, I'm his mentor. He's a teacher apprentice here. Okay? I'm supposed to get into his class at least once a week. I make it once a month. Now, there was a period of time I could get in more often. And we meet together periodically. Okay? Well, that's a relationship that is there. That's an accountable relationship. And we work on personal issues as well as academic issues and so on. But see, if we didn't even, we're not doing so well as it is, okay? But if we turned around and didn't even have some kind of an organization flowchart that says he's answering to me and we're talking together, then I guarantee it doesn't happen, okay? That's why you need to evaluate the organizational structure. Number two is academics. This is what school is about. And we're really talking school board here now. What should you be doing? Okay, we're also talking principals, we're also talking faculty, but I'm just saying school board members need to pay attention to this. I think you do have some responsibility to evaluate the curriculum. Now, I'll be fair with you. I have never thought it wise for a school board to choose curriculum if they have teachers who've had experience there. However, they certainly should approve it. And it's good for you to occasionally take a look. What are we being taught? And I'm not thinking so much here morally, right and wrong now. I'm thinking about effective curriculum. Is it working? Is it a good curriculum? Does it actually teach what we want taught? And I'm not thinking Bible. I'm not thinking Moses and Adam and Aaron. I'm thinking about math. And I'm thinking about a curriculum that works well to teach math. This needs to be evaluated. Are we getting the job accomplished with what we have? I used to be very, very big. I mean, hey, if you have a good teacher, they can teach anything. Okay, it doesn't really matter what the curriculum is. That's really not true. That's not true. Even if it is true, it still doesn't make sense. If you've got outstanding curriculum somewhere, well, that's what you ought to use. And you ought to be evaluating this kind of regularly and make sure that the right curriculum or a good curriculum is in place. Secondly, achievement. Now, this says a little bit about record keeping. You're a board member. How can you check on the achievement of the school, the achievement of students? How well are they doing? Well, the school is being administrated properly. There should be some records somewhere that tell you what they did on their achievement test last year and how they rank in relationship to other students, what kind of progress was made from year to year. I don't consider it anything out of the way at all. If a board member comes in and asks a question about what I feel the achievement is like and says, could I go over the achievement test results with you? Now, you don't want to do that in any kind of a menacing or incorrect posture, you know. you don't want to be posturing about that, but I'm just saying that that's perfectly legitimate and right for a school board member to be doing that. Are the children achieving? How are they doing? This, you can look at copies of their report cards or something. Thirdly, faculty development. Now, in our last session, I wish somehow our last session brought up an issue that always troubles me. I wish we could get out of that desperation mood and start, or mode, and start thinking about development. So you know what it is? It's just desperate to get the six teachers that we need for next year, rather than thinking. Okay, so we've got five teachers. We need another teacher, and then this next year, and there's the next year. And how? What can we do as a board to develop these teachers and move them along? That needs to be evaluated. D, I have on there testing. The only reason I have it there is I'm thinking achievement test or some kind of standardized testing material that you have. Tests do get outdated, and people get stuck on the 1972 or 1973 Iowa Test of Basic Skills or something like that, and you know, some of the results aren't quite what they should be. I'm just recommending these are the kinds of things that should be evaluated at least once a year. And I'll tell you a little bit how to do that after a bit. Thirdly, relationships. This is not easy to evaluate, but I just have a list of them there that you want to be thinking about. Faculty member to faculty member, principal to faculty members, faculty to parents. You can read the rest of them there. I don't have to go down through all of those. But I think what has to happen is we have to provide a framework within which this actually does happen. We can talk about it, and I can tell you today that this is something that ought to be done, and you can even go away from here thinking, yes, it should be done. But unless you put into place some kind of framework for that to happen, it won't happen. Okay? The framework comes a little bit later on here in question three, how are we going to get this done? But I'm going to jump ahead just a little bit now because this is so important. What I have found, for me, two important things on this. Number one is you have to schedule it. Now, I keep laying this on you, and I'll say it again. If you don't schedule it, it probably won't happen. Okay? When are you going to do this evaluation? Where are you going to do it? Such and such a time. Now, I know we do it all along. But I'm saying, for me, if I don't get it in my calendar book, if I don't get it at a slot, the bad thing is, even sometimes if I do get it there, it doesn't get done. But if it doesn't get in my calendar, I know it's not going to happen. I'll tell you that ahead of time. If it's in there, at least it has a 50% chance. But if it's not there, it's not going to happen. And the second thing is, when I talk framework, I'm going to talk forms. I just want to make this practical. Some kind of form that will work. Because if you have a form, and you can get that thing out, and you can look at it, and this is an evaluation form, you give that to a teacher to fill out, they've got something tangible in their hands. They got to do something with it. They can either throw it in a waste paper can, they can put it in some corner on their desk, or they can fill it out. They have some options, but they've got to do something with it because you gave them the paper. It's got to, you know. But if you don't even give them the paper, it's like they can get by for a long time without doing it. Let me show you a couple things like I'm talking about. Here's an evaluation form that we use here at Faith Builders. This one is not particularly on relationships, but in our teacher apprentice program, whoops, need to flip this thing up here. Let me get some focus on that as well. Okay. Now, the classes that we can get into regularly, we have a form like this. I very seldom give this to the student teacher. Not because I don't want to, but simply because Normally, I'm just going to pick the three things that I want to talk to them about after they're done teaching their class or something like that. But just having this form in front of me as I'm sitting in the back of the room and I have this on my lap. I don't know how it is with you, but if I don't have it on my lap, it's like I forget the categories. It's like all of a sudden they escape me. I mean, what is it that I'm supposed to be evaluating? But here it is. I've got that clarity of objectives, appropriateness of objectives, achievement of objectives. And I can go over here and comment on it. Now, I put this one up here for a reason, though, because this is one we used to use. We still use it sometimes. I don't do real well with this kind of thing. In fact, if you give this to the average person, what he's going to do is he's going to fill out about four or five of these blocks and the rest of them will be empty. Okay? I'm not exactly sure why that is. I don't know if it's laziness or what it is. But let me show you another form that I found that works. If you want to get me to do something, give me a form like this one that I'm going to show you. This and I'll do. Okay, and it won't take me all that long to do it. This is administration image questionnaire. Okay. If you're board chairman, you might think of doing something like this sometime. Make up an evaluation form like this and give it to the teachers. This is for you. You're evaluating yourself. You want to know how the teachers feel. And so you write out some questions like this on a scale of 1 to 5. You say circle whichever one seems the best to you. 1, never, 2, seldom, 3, sometimes, you know, and all that. These are easy forms to do. And now what you're doing is you're creating a framework where evaluation really actually will take place. Okay? And that's really the emphasis of everything I'm saying to you, and that is evaluation will not happen unless you have a framework. You have to create it. Okay? And the way to create it is to start with some of these kinds of things. I don't mean you have to put it all in place in 1 year. We're still working at it here. Forms and that kind of thing drive me bananas. I do not like them. Okay? But I'll be up front with you. Milo is the form man around here. He does really well at that. Yeah, he can generate papers like you wouldn't believe. So I tell him, we need this, that, or the other thing, you know. And I mean, the next day, he's got this form on my desk. Well, what I know is if he can get that form to me, I'm going to get somewhere with this thing. Now, I've got something to work on, all right? So I have him do it. He does it for me. You find somebody like that who just kind of loves to tinker on that thing and make charts and forms and stuff. Tell him what you want and have him do it for you. And then I get one by one, get these into place. It's not like you do them all overnight. Okay, you got to know what you need, what you don't need, you know. And you get those things out. Now you can fill them out. I can pull this thing out, rip down through that thing about 15 minutes. I can be done with it, put it back in the box, and say that's what I think. You know, on a scale of 1 to 5. This all comes under the heading of creating a framework for it. We'll come back to that a bit later. So now my point here on relationships, number 3. See this one. I'll get this right back up here quickly again. We're actually, even though this says administration image questionnaire, we're actually talking relationships. Okay, see, because you read down through here. Does he adjust rapidly to changes in plans or procedures? Does he consider divergent views? I mean, you're talking relation. How does a person actually respond in various circumstances? Try to get together forms that work well in these categories or whichever categories you choose or you think is important for your school. And if you get them there and then you have them scheduled and you say, this goes out such and such a day and I expect to have them back in a month or 2 days or a week or whatever, then you're starting to get on the road to having some kind of healthy evaluation done in the school. Okay? Now I know I just ramble along here. Let me stop for a moment and see if you have any questions or comments. Maybe you have something to add. Don't feel free. I think the bottom line here right now is, as much as I detest forms, you can tell I have gotten excited about their value. If you get them in at the right place at the right time, they're very, very helpful in the development of your program. And as a school board, if you can think through the things that you need and do those, in that sense, it'll help. I'm not going to talk about all this relationship things there. That's not really within the scope of what I want to emphasize. However, it's a big part of evaluating the school. Number four, finances. This is obvious. For a school board, you want to develop a budget. Now, I don't know how many of you are doing this. We're struggling with this right now here. Of course, our organization is plenty big, and so it takes, you know, we're trying to get the formulas together and all that stuff to get a budget. This is David's job. And so we look at papers, and we look at financial reports, and we begin to say, okay, so next year we can expect this and this and this and so forth and so on. I don't know if you do that or not. Probably to a certain extent you do. Get a cost per student, income sources, think about those. For us, we have some more variation than you likely would have in your typical school. Number five, physical plant. Boilers, utilities cost, furniture, maintenance lists. Here again, I don't know the details of your school. I just know that these are things that need to be tended to. And when the fall comes and winter comes and the furnace is supposed to come on and it doesn't come on and it won't work because the thing wasn't inspected or it wasn't checked or something was wrong with it, it can be very irritating. And as Christians, we don't let the irritation get to us, but it could have all been avoided probably. Just simply be by somebody being designated, likely not the principal of the school, but perhaps a board member. Designated, here's a paper. We want you, and this paper says on it, ask the questions here. When was the last time the boiler was inspected? Was it serviced? And, you know, they just check, yes or no. It's been done. Put the date beside it or whatever to make sure that those things are happening. For us here, again, this is a job that we just have to keep after. I have notebooks up there in my office, and I just go from page to page, and that's if I have everything up to date, it says, okay, it's time to do the PCH inspection. Get ready for that. Fill out this form and do this and send this here and make sure this happens and this happens. That's what needs to happen here. don't underestimate what just good planning and good evaluation of something like the physical plant will do for a school. Question three here is, what methods of evaluation shall we use? How do we get this done? I've already mentioned a few of these, but I have four listed. Number one is the personal interview. I wouldn't make a great big deal of this. The schools that I have been in, the people who did this the best were the board chairman or the board members who stopped after school, and they didn't stop in because they thought there was big trouble now and they had to have a personal interview with me. They just stopped in, just wanted to talk for a little bit about things. And maybe they really did have something specifically in mind, I don't know. But they had a way of coming in and just personally interviewing me. One of our board chairmen actually would go around to all the teachers almost every Tuesday evening. He would stop by and he'd just go over. You know, most of the teachers are still working in their classroom a little bit. Go in, sit down, talk a little bit. Go to the first and second grade teacher, third and fourth grade teacher, go around. Personally interviewing them, just simply getting from them how things were going. That is certainly one of the finest methods of evaluation you can do. Number two is written reports. Now, it is amazing what a written report will do. It is one thing to say, David, we want you to check the boilers. Okay, and tell us next month how things are. It's another thing to say, we really would like to have a written report of the condition of the boilers. Okay, because now he goes down and he looks. What are you going to write if you don't look? Okay, and make some kind of an evaluation, and now you actually have something down on paper. It's been evaluated. Now, I'm talking boilers, and that's hardly even important. But let's say you're going to look over achievement records. It's nice to get something down. If you appoint a board member to give some thought to this, he looks at it, he gives a short paragraph, he brings it, he reads it to the board, and they've got something on record. Written reports are very valuable. The larger the school, the more important that is. For us, that has been one of the best things that ever happened here. Each department sits down and writes a report, okay, as to what's happening in their department. And as they write that report, we can go back and look at that thing. It's amazing the number of things you go back and look at and say, well, I've forgotten about that. That's right. We better deal with that issue. If it hadn't been written down, we wouldn't have known it. We might have forgotten it. Number three, review of records. I've already pointed this out. I might just say to you, here's an issue. Attendance. Don't underestimate the power of good, solid record keeping, not only for school evaluation, but just in the general picture of things. We sometimes entertain the question, what would happen if the climate in America turns against private Christian education? We better have our ducks in a row. Okay? And I'm just saying, in some schools, I'm afraid this is way too loose. The law says, at least in Pennsylvania, the law says that you've got to have these records. You know, you've got to have the excuses. You've got to have this written down. And even though some people come under the Amish clause and only go to school 160 days, you know, the law says 180 days. And my concern about this is not to get on people's case because they're not doing what I think they should do. But I wonder about how this would go if, in fact, in 10 years or 20 years, we'd really be scrutinized. And they would either going to close us down or let us stay open on the basis of how well we had been complying with the law before and how well we had been keeping everything in order. For that reason, I feel like records ought to be kept. Adequate records that are within the stated law of the particular state that you're in that says that this is the way it should be done. We try to do that.
You know, is there any law of statuation of limits or anything? Like for attendance, do we keep them forever or is there a certain amount of years?
You know, I'm not sure about that. I think I was up to Harrisburg just not two or three years ago and kind of listened to what all they had to say about it. And if I remember right, there is a 7-year rule on it. That after 7 years, somebody asked it specifically, don't quote me on this and don't throw your records away until you check, but I think they said 7 years and you can discard them. We've boxed ours probably for 20 years and it's not like they're just all real organized and that you could just go and pick them up immediately, but they are there. And I just feel like we should, first of all, be law-abiding. And secondly, in terms of evaluation, in terms of charting a course, it all helps you. It turns your direction when you're doing this well. This includes personal records on each of the students and all of those things. We'd like to keep those up to snuff. And I'm absolutely sure that when if the time comes that we are going to be scrutinized or checked out, schools that have these things in order will be in much better shape. Than schools who have neglected it. Fourthly, evaluation forms. I have already pointed this out. I kind of interjected it here into the center of things. I have here a pack of various forms that we use here, and you'd be welcome to look through them. Course evaluation form. There's one already put up on the board. Lesson plan, evaluation, class observations. These are all forms that we have developed here at Faith Builders and used. You'd be welcome to look through them if you'd like to. What do you have to add to question three? What methods of evaluation have you found that have been very useful? Okay. Guidelines. Number one, develop a schedule of evaluation. I've already emphasized that as well, and I don't think I can overemphasize it. I know for Melvin Lehman, he needs it. He's just got to have it or it doesn't happen. Number two, appoint appropriate personnel to do the evaluation. Here again, you're going to have a schedule. Now you have a person who is going to do it. Of course, you make a good choice. So if it is physical plant,
Well, you're not going to choose somebody who is not into construction, or you want to choose an Elmer Schrock or somebody like that and send them into that school and say, here, look this thing over and tell us what shape you think the heating system is in. Are we going to need to replace it soon or what? Okay. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about evaluating the faculty, you might even consider getting an independent teacher from somewhere else who comes in and evaluates. There are schools who have done that periodically, and I think it's good. I was going to bring along a form here. I think Milo has it upstairs. We're not doing this, but ACSI has they have a whole packet of stuff that they use if they're going to accredit a school. Okay. Now, we're not seeking accreditation, but it is interesting to walk down through that and see what they think is important. If a school is really up to snuff and deserves to be accredited, forget about the issues of faculty and their credentials and all that, and just look at the other things that are in a packet like that. It'll really help you a lot to pay attention to some things that you might not otherwise. You can get those from ACSI if you want them. But what I was getting around to saying is, if I wanted my school evaluated academically, I might be wise to go to Elmer Glick and say, would you mind coming by our school for, you have a weekend, you have a day that you could take off and come up and just sit in and listen and see what's going on and perhaps look through our records a bit and then make some recommendations to us. That's good. That's good. I think that's very good. If you can find a person, a resource person in your community who does well at that, get the appropriate person who would do well at it and appoint them. Now you've got the schedule, you've got the person. And number three there already said, where appropriate, recruit independent evaluators. They tend to be more objective is the point there. And fourthly, what I've been emphasizing all along, create forms to help standardize the procedure. I almost guarantee you if you do those three, actually one, two, and four, if you do those, you're probably going to get on the road of actually thinking about what's happening in your school. And I can almost guarantee you that if you begin to actively think about what's happening in your school, the school will get better. Because you evaluate, you find its weaknesses, you try to shore them up, you try to strengthen it where things are weak. All right, what comments do you have or questions? Well, I thought I was going to run out of time. Look at that there. I've got 15 minutes left. Any questions? I don't dare ask the question, are you going to do it? But I really want to urge you to do that just simply because I, for one, I don't think our schools should exist just to satisfy the regulatory agencies in the state. I've committed myself to seeing our schools getting better over the years. I'm delighted with what was done in the 70s and the 60s to get our schools up and going. I don't think it's time to drop the vision. I think it's time to start talking about how we can do better at what we're already doing. And that's what this workshop is about. It's just simply saying to you school board members, hey, don't drop the ball now. Somebody got it started back in the 60s and the 70s, likely in your community. Now carry it further through evaluating your schools and seeing what should happen next. Okay? As I said, you can look through some of these papers here. Perhaps you have some sources in your own community, schools that have already been going for a while. I hope you wouldn't be frightened just to stop by the more liberal Mennonite school. For example, in our community back home, Shalom Christian Academy has been there for a number of years. And they've been through a lot of this before. If you're afraid that it sounds like too much work to generate all of this, well, go find a school that's been doing it. They'll help you. Be very, very glad to show you what they've been doing. And sometimes you can just take a form or whatever and just alter a little bit and you're up and going. Okay? It's late in the afternoon. Supper's going to be at 5. we're all getting sleepy. I'm going to let you go unless you have questions.
I might ask a question.
Sure. Okay. Sure. You'd like to find these within your own community.
Yeah.
I definitely recommend that. You want to find? I would try to find somebody in the community, a ninth grader, eighth grader, somebody who's already out of school who shows an aptitude. I was going to say that when we were talking, when Brandon was asking me those nasty questions, somebody who has an aptitude to teach. And as far as development is concerned, I think that you need to then send them to some places where they can get some help. I think places like CMTI, I think Calvary Bible School, don't they do a thing in the during the summer? Am I right on it? They don't? Okay, I was thinking maybe they did. Messiah does it? Okay. Of course, here at Faith Builders, that's what we're all about, actually. We try to run summer courses here so that a person who is wanting to teach, maybe they're not interested in our entire program at all, but they can come here for principles of teaching and be around teachers. Maybe somebody can help me here, but it seems to me as though you want to take a person who you think might do well and put them in academic atmosphere. And I'm not going to dictate that for other communities. I'm not going to say, well, that means college or that means Faith Builders or whatever it means. But for your community, if you can think to yourself, where is the academic atmosphere in the community? And then get that person into those circles, okay, wherever they are. You'll help them in some development. CMTI is only a two-day thing. Two-day thing normally. But it is very interesting how a person who goes there for those 2 days will come away just because they were with 300, 400 teachers. Okay, and they come away feeling energized, having received some good information, and they do better, it seems. I know that's not some real tangible help, but if you can think academic atmosphere, where is it? Where would my community feel good about us sending a person to pick up that kind of input and then do that? Somebody else have a suggestion for the brother here?
As far as getting them thinking, I think you got your conversation with John Martin.
Yeah. Yes, maybe I'll just share my testimony. Maybe this will be helpful to you. When I graduated from high school, I had no intention whatsoever of teaching school, period. In fact, I was asked, I think when I was 18, first, and I kind of looked at the person who asked me the blank stare and said, what? Me teach school? No, I don't think so. And kind of shrugged it off. However, some of you probably know Lester Showalter and John D. Martin. And I don't know, maybe somebody's here from Indiana. I flew those brothers out to Indiana back when I believe I was 19 years old. I was flying at the time. And you can see I wasn't going to teach school. I was going to fly airplanes and be a mechanic and a number of other things, you know. And so I took them out to Indiana to a meeting. What is that? It'd be 1974, maybe. They were trying to get Christian schools going. On the way out, John Martin was looking over my shoulder, and he was asking me how this worked and how that worked, and I was explaining, okay, that this does this and this does that. And he's thinking to himself, hey, you, this guy would be a good teacher. he didn't tell me that. He just thought it. A full two or three years went by, and I'd gotten married. And I remember of meeting him in the basement of the church, talking about teacher development now and trying to get people that recruit them for this. I had gotten into business. My mechanical business was still flying and all of that, and he kind of bumped into me, shook hands, and He asked me what I was doing, and I told him. I kind of saw him just drop his head just a little bit, and I said, "Well, Brother John, what's the problem with that?" Well, he said he had always hoped that I would be a school teacher. I said, "Say what? You always thought that you always hoped that I'd be a school teacher?" And I really kind of shrugged my shoulders and walked off. But the funny thing was, that thing would not, I couldn't shake it. I just could not shake that off. And I tried pretty hard to for about 6 months or a year. And I eventually got into teaching school. Saying all that to say, when you see talent and ability, what you need to do is tap that person on the shoulder and just let them know, "Hey, I see that you have teaching skill. And I'd like to, I just wonder if you'd consider doing that. And if you would, I'll tell you what I'd do." They might say, "I'll tell you what you do. Why don't you go to Faith Builders?" And this is not a plea for Faith Builders, this is an idea. "Why don't you go to Faith Builders for the summer, 6 weeks? I'll pay your way. And you just be among those teachers for a little bit and see if that's something that you might enjoy doing. And if it's in your heart to do that, I'd like for you to consider that next year. Teach school here in our community." For me, it kind of went that direction. There wasn't a Faith Builders to go to at that time, but you know, it was that brother tapped me on the shoulder. That fastened itself on my heart, I believe, by God's direction. And, here I am. Yes?
You've been talking maybe from the viewpoint of someone who hasn't taught yet. Let's do the same thing for our first and second year teachers.
Excellent. Absolutely. Don't be afraid to do it. To affirm their... Say, "I've been watching you, and I can see you've got what it takes to be a school teacher. I'd like to encourage you in that long term. How about, why don't you, again, you know, go to Messiah or Faith Builders or wherever and just develop that skill a little bit." I personally, and I'm not putting this on any community, I personally don't have a problem either if the person's mature enough. There's a local junior college or something, and they feel like they need a little sharpening up on how to teach reading or something like that. Create for them that academic and that affirmation. That affirmation and academic atmosphere that says, "I believe you are a teacher. And I want to encourage you in it." Okay? Somebody else with a... Yes?
Going back to the previous session, when we were discussing about asking a teacher back for the next year, you made a passing comment about maybe Christmas vacation or after Christmas vacation. Good time. Is the month of December...
I wouldn't pressure him then. It's not so bad, but I always found the run between Thanksgiving and Christmas to be kind of a hustle-bustle, keep it together, and the students are wanting to kind of fall apart, and then you're... Yeah, yeah, so I wouldn't pressure a lot then, I don't think.
The reason I asked that then, that you said that a couple of years ago, one of our teachers came to us later and said, "The last 2 years, we normally, the first, second, and December, the last 2 years, you have been the worst day, hardest day of the year." So we actually stepped it up to November.
That was wise, I believe. Thanksgiving vacation, I don't know. I don't know if it's... For you board members, just let me clue you in. This is about the way the ebb and flow goes for me. Now, I've been in it long enough now that I've just learned to ignore my feelings. Okay? The first couple of years of teaching, boy, you come into September, you're just really wound up tight. Now, I mean, I'm ready to go. And along about October 10th, October 15th, it begins to slow a little bit for me. And the students are now, they're into their routine and they're starting to get cranked up in other ways, and so I'm starting to, I don't know, slide not into depression, but just downhill a little bit, you know. I don't quite have, I know I'm in it for the grind now. But there's Thanksgiving vacation, okay, and so you kind of head that direction, and you get there, and then that Thanksgiving to Christmas run is hectic. It's like trying to keep it all put together and pieced together, and you feel like you're getting behind here and behind there, and on and on and on. I mean, I'm always really, I do well in January. Maybe that's not true of all teachers, but I come back in January after Christmas vacation. I do well. February 15th to March 15th is a drag for me. That's you got to, you're slugging it out. The students starting to get a little bit warm outside, and the students are a little antsy and all of that. And then along about April 15th, and I pick it up, and I am ready for the run to the end, and I do go for it. That's me. I'm sure it's not true of all teachers, but my experience has been, don't pressure them between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Just let them know that you want them to come back, if that's the case. Okay, any other questions? So many teachers are here. Okay. Is that the way it feels to you, David, kind of like that ebb and flow? What about you, Ellen? I'm kind of in that category somewhere.
Roughly,
yeah. Although, as I said, I think after my fifth year of teaching, I recognized the ebb and flow. And there was a time when I decided, now when those feelings come, I ignore them. And I just say, coming into this classroom today to bless these children, and it might be that I feel a little tired, but we're going to go for it. That's what we do most of the time. Okay, any other questions or comments? Well, thank you.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit christianlearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.